This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now for this show, we're super excited about it. It's Dr. Ian Dunbar. And Dr. Dunbar is going to be talking to us a little bit about his latest book about barking up the right tree, the science and practice of positive dog training. So we're going to pick his brain a little bit about the book, a little bit about how dog training and behavior has changed over the years, or how maybe in a positive manner, maybe not so positive manner. And then we'll talk to him a little bit about just writing of books and getting information out there, or how the process works. We'll pick his brain from the author side as well. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm super excited to have on the show tonight. He's a veterinarian, animal behaviorist, knows everything there is to know about animals in general and how to raise them, from puppies in particular, puppies into dogs, and the nuances behind it. Of course, we're talking about Dr. Ian Dunbar. Dr. Dunbar, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Tim. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we're excited too. And I was excited to see the book, the latest book, Barking Up the Right Tree, The Science and Practice of Positive Dog Training. And obviously, we know your long-term commitment to canines and animals in general, and how you developed the cutting-edge technique of positive dog training. So tell us a little bit about this particular book and how it's different from some of the other books you published over the years.
Well, most of the books I've written are like how to raise your puppy, how to train your puppy, how to train your adult. This one is more about concepts in training, which I lectured about from 2008 to 2015. And then I suddenly realized 2 years ago, none of this is written down. So I wrote it down, and it's more sort of, how should I put it, creative, state-of-the-art stuff, like better rewards in training, better reinforcement schedules. And most importantly, the jewel of the crown of the book is when your dogs misbehave or they're non-compliant, they don't do what you ask, how you resolve that using just your voice and without even having to raise it. So you don't have to raise a voice, and you certainly don't have to raise your hand. You just, if the dog's barking, you say, shush. If he's jumping up and down like an idiot, you say, sit. And so we calmly instruct dogs what to do. And so a single word actually communicates three pieces of information. One, stop what you're doing. Two, specifically do this instead. And three, the degree of urgency or potential danger if the dog doesn't comply. But our voice has just disappeared from training over the past two decades. So not only am I now, writing this book, but now I'm blogging like a fiend at DunbarAcademy.com.
I love that. I love that. And getting the messages out, and the good thing about blogging, obviously, you're getting them out on a regular schedule, a daily basis, or however often you blog, it gets quick little messages out to everybody so they can learn right away. Now, I love the comment that you made there, because obviously, the way I sort of view dog training in particular, we've got sort of the dominant dog training, the pack leader, the forcefulness, which I'm definitely not in favor of it. And then the positive side. And as I was reading through the book, I found it fascinating, because it seems to me that positive dog training is obviously the way to go, and how more and more people are learning about what it is and how to implement it. But it has gone to more of a reward-based system. Like every time you do something, they get a treat.
No, you would never do that. If you gave a dog a treat every time, you would quickly devalue food rewards, and they'd lose their reinforcing value. And of course, you have the risk that they would become bribes. And now the dog's behavior is contingent on you having food in your hand or on your body. So the important thing about the difference between punishment and reward, with punishment, you must be consistent. If you miss just once, the dog will learn when he can misbehave without being punished. But with rewards, not only, you needn't be consistent, you shouldn't be consistent. You want rewards to be like unexpected. You want to raise the anticipation, and that increases their reinforcing power. So you can actually be totally inconsistent when using rewards. And probably the biggest problem in dog training today that allowed, you know, aversive punishments to come back in again is that so-called positive trainers using reinforcement are giving far too many rewards. And so their behaviors aren't as reliable. And so, you know, that enabled on-leash stuff to make another charge at it. But really it's the fact now that positive dog training is not working the way it should. People have strayed from, you know, the original way and have made it overly complicated, impersonal and theoretical, rather than highly practical, effective, and just having a jolly good time.
Yeah, and I think that's a brilliant point to make, because you're right, because those that are training their dogs and they're using a positive approach, I get called upon this quite often. As I mentioned before, you know, oftentimes they view it as a treat system. You know, every time you do something positive, I give you a treat. And then I get asked questions about, okay, well, how big is the treat? And what is the treat? And won't they get too fat from the treat? It's like, well, yes. And as you stated throughout the book and stated just now, the fact that there are all kinds of rewards. You know, there's all kinds of ways that your dog will see the benefit of, you know, acting in a manner that you prefer them to act. And some of that is just sort of verbal, but it can also be, you know, walks and play and pets and just a lot of positive energy and emotion going their way. And it doesn't always have to be some sort of a treat or reward, as you said.
No, and you'll never get there just using, you know, clicks and treats. What you have to use in training are the things the dog really wants that we normally call distractions or annoying behaviors, like playing with other dogs, sniffing, you know, interactive games with the person. So my two most commonly used rewards are Rover sit, go sniff. And of course, I'll let the dog sniff when I say so. And then let's go, and then sit again, go sniff. And when they're playing with other dogs, I just say, sit, there's a good dog. Or who's a good boy? Lie down, go play. And the neat thing is, when you interrupt these two of the dogs, the most powerful reinforcing activities in like universal dogdom, playing with other dogs and sniffing, the more times you interrupt them just for a very short training interlude, the more times you can let the dog resume them, using now what was a distraction that worked against training as a reward that works for training.
And that's it. That's the amazing part about the whole thing. I love what you covered in the book, is the fact that, you know, it's sort of, you know, really get back to the basics, but more importantly, understanding what the basics are, which are simple things that dogs like to do and allow them to do that.
Absolutely. And, you know, positive reinforcement training has just got stuck in food treats. And it's true. They are bribing now. They don't phase out, you know, food rewards. And so we use a technique, I call it lure reward training, you know, four steps, request, lure, response, reward. So I say sit, then I move the food lure in a way so the dog sits. So basically the food lure is just to teach the dog the meaning of the hand signal and then the verbal request. But I phase it out in the first session. So now I'm only using food rewards, but already, you know, within the first minute, I ask the dog, come, sit, down, sit, stand, down, stand, and maybe reward it. So I'm getting seven behaviors for one reward. Or I'll take a little golden puppy, they're incredible, and I'll have them do puppy push-ups, you know, which are down sits. And the average golden first week in puppy class will do 20. Just for the prospect of a reward. You haven't even given it. Well, that's 40 behaviors for one. So I'm already phasing it out before I start training. And I phase it out because I don't want to always have food with me. And really, there are so many other rewards which are far more reinforcing, like playing fetch, tug, hide and seek with your dog. you know, this is what dogs really thrive on. And then all you do is have rules to the game, kind of like if we're playing soccer and the ref blew their whistle, you know, everyone stands still. Well, I say sit instead of a whistle and the dog sits. And because he does that, usually I say go play immediately because I've just demonstrated I'm in control with my dog 40 yards away playing with a bunch of dogs in a dog park. And so it becomes much easier now to administer rewards. We don't like toss the treat on the ground or get the dog all come all the way back for it. You know, it's there's just too many rewards in reinforcement training. And we don't really look into what does the dog really want to do. He wants to hang out and do things with you, his person. And then he'll gladly usually do what you ask.
I love it. It sort of translates into humans, you know, and the way I look at it is the fact that if we're getting a treat, say a piece of cake as a reward, well, that's fantastic at the time, but that wears off rather quickly. What we really want to is to be, you know, have relationships and do things and travel and, you know, be part of everything. And it's just the same thing with our dogs. You know, the treat may be a temporary reward, but as you said, it gets old and commonplace and expected. And so doing the things that they really want to do and rewarding them in that fashion is a much better way for a mental and physical stimulation for them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of trainers go down the slippery slope of looking for a better treat, and they use all these commercial treats, which, you know, have far too much, you know, salt and sugar and carbohydrate and preservatives in. And then they find the dog's blowing it off, so they go to something that's greasy, like hot dog or chicken, and eventually dried fish. I only use kibble, basic dry kibble. You know, what the dog eats usually, I mean, a dry food, you know, very high quality food, but it's dry and it's part of their normal diet that I measure out in the morning and use, say, 20 pieces for teaching basic manners, or occasionally 50 pieces to teach the dog to love the presence of children or other dogs. But it's just kibble. But we don't use them over and over when teaching manners because, as you said, that's the quickest way to devalue their reinforcing power.
Yeah. And I think it's also from a human standpoint, you know, they're human companions, us. We want what's best for them. We want to train them. We want them to behave in a fashion we want them to behave in. But putting forth the time and commitment is something we're not prepared to do. So it's so much easier to toss a treat on the ground, like you said, or hand them a piece of jerky or whatever it may be, than to actually be present in their moment, to go out and take them to places so they can be with other dogs and, you know, be part of the moment.
It's actually not. It's a lot of people these days do not test, did the training work and how quickly it worked? I do. I'm always testing how easy was it for people, how quick was it, and how reliable, how effective. And the easiest, quickest, most effective way to teach cued responses, you know, come, sit, down, roll over, high five and stuff, is lure reward training. And then we phase out the food lure, phase out the food reward, and use all these rewards the dog likes. And once we've taught, you know, a fairly large vocabulary, and not big, say 20 words, we can now string together sentences. Like with my second Malamute, I used to say, Phoenix, come here, sit, take this and go to Jamie, please. And she would sit and take the bit of paper in my hand, go upstairs, out the yard, looking for Jamie, sit in front of him. And we called it Malamute Mail. He would take the note, come in, lunch is ready. I mean, you can have so much fun with it once you've taught the dog essentially ESL, English as a second language. Now we can at least communicate with them. And then what I like is when owners learn how to read their dog. So they know what their dog wants. They know how their dog feels. There are ways to ask questions. You know, what would they like to do? How are they feeling today? And that to me is the fun of having a dog, that, you know, we open communication channels. They understand us. We understand them. We have a lot of fun together. And the training part is quick. The having fun part, no, it takes a lifetime. You know, I look on living with a dog, that every interaction in the house is a training, teaching opportunity, but also a fun opportunity. You see, if the dog ever knows that this is fun, but that's training, they're going to choose fun. That's why training is more fun than anything, because they're doing it with you.
I love it. I love that. And every opportunity is a training opportunity. So it's just like us humans, every opportunity is a learning opportunity. So listen and learn on that behalf. So when putting together the book, I know you said you lectured on this obviously for years, and then you realized, oh, I didn't put this down in writing. Once you put it into the book, Barking Up the Right Tree, were there some surprises or things that you had forgot to mention in your lectures or some of these type of things, or was it pretty straightforward?
Loads of stuff. Well, the last 10 years worth of like innovations in dog training, not only were they not written down, they weren't in my lectures back then, but there was one lecture, science-based dog training with feeling, where I sort of analyzed the laboratory science that everyone follows and worships now and said, explained how it was so lame and didn't work very well, because this was computers consistently and well-timed training captive rats. Well, the rat couldn't escape punishment, so punishment worked well in the lab, but it doesn't work well when humans try to administer it, because humans don't have good timing and they're utterly inconsistent most of the time. But even the, you know, doling out the rewards, the reinforcement schedules were just too silly for words. So I have a lot written down. And one of the things I've done since I started my career, every workshop I've ever given, and I mean, I've given over 1,500 one-day workshops and seminars, they've all been filmed. So I cataloged them from way back when, and every seminar I've given. So we developed this website where we archived them all. So it's probably now the largest sort of online resource for dog behavior and training. And that's DunbarAcademy.com. I mean, it's just huge. If you binged watched it, watched say 16 hours a day, it would take you 4 months to get through it. And so there's a lot of, you know, really easy stuff, because I don't like teach people this to sort of impress them that I've got lots of doctorate degrees and I'm using long words and acronyms. I imagine I have a five-year-old child in the audience and I'm talking to them. This is how you train your dog simply, quickly, and very effectively, so you can now communicate with it. But I must admit, I did. There were some things that were so old, I'd forgotten them, that I, you know, and so I went back and I watched a couple of old videos myself and read some old lecture notes. But I loved that writing the book was a joy in COVID. I loved writing it. But I ended up with 500,000 words, and editing it down to 120,000 was so painful. It literally was. It hurt me seeing my words be chopped out by the editor.
Gosh, darn those editors.
But the neat thing about the book is it sold out before it was released. It was amazing. So they had to do a second printing, and the book hadn't even been released yet to the bookstores. Yeah, it made me happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's just a testament to you know, your skill and how long you've been doing this. Everybody knows you're an expert in the field. I applaud you for many things, but one of them was stating the fact that you videotaped everything. You know, nowadays, that seems to be the only route for people to learn. I hate to say that because we're promoting your book here, but, you know, video is the way to go. And you were, you know, cutting edge and knowing to do that very early on. So now you can attack this. I shouldn't say attack, but you can definitely take this training in two facets. Those that can read from the book and learn and reference it and earmark it, those type of things, and those that want the videos to watch quickly and to learn from.
Well, you said it right there, watch quickly. I now am a video editor, which I used to be years ago, about 20 years ago. And now I'm taking these 30-minute, 1 hour, 6 hour long videos and break them up into 30-second and 1 minute clips. So people will watch it, you know, and they're all exciting, of course. They're really dynamic because they're clips. But then what I like to do, if ever I put a clip anywhere, I say, you can watch the whole session unedited at Dunbar Academy. So you can see me training with all the glitches, you know, where everything goes wrong and I tell the dog shush and he goes woof, woof. You know, and then how I deal with it. And I think that really is a good learning aid for people. You know, it's no good them watching a dog trainer and the dog's perfect. They don't learn anything apart from, God, that's an incredible dog, an incredible trainer. So I'm proud of all my mistakes on camera. I gave a lecture in Japan years ago. It was 3 hours long. I had a video of all the recorded mistakes I've made when training, and they loved it. I mean, it was hilarious.
So you had your own personal blooper reel. That was the key.
Yeah.
But I think that's a brilliant part of it. And for people to see that, because, you know, rarely I'll say, no matter how good you are, no matter how much I follow your plan or read your books or see your seminars, I don't think I, you know, ever could have a dog immediately respond. Or maybe they'll respond the way I want them to the first time. And then I go back the second time and try it. And they decide, eh, I've already done that. I don't want to do that again. So seeing those little glitches and bloopers pop up and then how to correct those without getting frustrated or yelling or screaming or things like that is brilliant.
Well, it's, you know, I'm not a great dog trainer. I mean, I know many dog trainers who are much better at me at sticking with it and training the dog. I just see it from the owner's viewpoint. You want this quick and easy, right? Okay, here it goes. But I do have one training skill, which is amazing because I am not a patient person. I'm so impatient. But with dogs, I have so much patience. If I tell them to sit, do you know the next thing they're going to do before they go back playing again is they're going to sit. I don't care how long it takes. I said sit. So you have to sit. And once they sit, if they, you know, fiddled around with me and wasted my time and I had to repeat the instruction, then they have to repeat the behavior. So once they sat, I say, thank you. Brilliant. You know, sarcastically, like Will Ferrell on his sarcasm training stuff. And then I say, let's do it again, shall we? Come here, sit. Oh, good dog. Go play. And they learn quickly from that, that when I say, and I usually have a code word, their name. So you see, if I said, Hugo, sit. It's not a command. It's not even a request. It's a suggestion. I'd like you to do this, but if you don't want to, don't. I just thought it'd be nice. I said, hey, come over here on the couch. If you're happier on the floor, fine with me. If I wanted them to do it, which I only do probably, what, 3 minutes in a day, I say, Hugo Louis, sit. And then I enforce it with patience by following up with, you know, and there's no raising my voice. I don't get upset. I just wait until they sit. And when they sit, they have to repeat it. And so the dog learns, you know, if you're playing and Ian says, Hugo Louis, sit, the quickest way to get back to playing again is to sit the first time he says it. And that's how you get levels of ultra reliability on demand. Because now for the other, you know, 23 hours and 57 minutes in the day, you and your dog can chill and relax. You're off duty. And I love it when I give the dog a suggestion and he says, no, I'm asleep. It was just a suggestion. I don't say, oh, you're dissing me. You're trying to dominate me. Oh, I'm going to give you an alpha rollover and make your life a misery. I just laugh. And so then I'll call another dog up on the couch and say, hey, Duke, come on the couch. Good boy. Do you want one of Hugo's cookies? Do you want another treat of Hugo's? You want and by about the sixth one, Hugo then says, can I come on the couch?
Love that. Eat your vegetables before you get your pudding. I think so. Love it. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Dr. Ian Dunbar. Talk a little bit more about his latest book, Barking Up the Right Tree, The Science and Practice of Positive Dog Training. So everybody, hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises as a method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with Dr. Ian Dunbar and his book, Barking Up the Right Tree. Now, you talked before the break a little bit about putting together this book and the painfulness of trying to weed out or your editor saying, great book, make it half the size.
A third of the size.
And it's a good size book as it is. And so, you know, I can imagine what you had to go through. How did you go about doing that? Did you sort of take a step back, say, okay, well, these parts I can put in a different book. Maybe we'll have three books.
I made a very difficult decision up front that the book is about changing the behavior of animals, you know, obviously dogs, horses, cats and stuff, but people included, how it applies to interacting with your children, your employees, your spouse or friends or what have you. So I took all the human examples out, and I'm actually going to write this with my son, another book on the same principles applied to living with people and motivating people. So that took out about 200,000 words. And so it was painful, but I thought this would be a lovely opportunity where I can work with my son, and I love doing that. And so that was, you know, that was cool. I would like to say one thing, though. I actually, being English, I get very uptight when we're plugging something of mine, like the book. Firstly, thank you for mentioning it, because it's a very good book and it'll help a lot of people.
Sure.
But years ago, I made a decision to make a lot of my other books available for free. So people can get these, they can download them for free from, DunbarAcademy.com, and they click on a course that's called the Free Course Collection. Then they scroll down and there's some free puppy training courses. And then it says, I think, 2 free puppy training eBooks. Well, when they click on that, they'll find there are actually 3 free eBooks, 2 about puppy training and 1 about adult dog training. And they just download for free, and they'll find lots of other free offers there. You know, I just thought that I wanted to get to owners when they're thinking of getting a puppy. Every adult dog was once a puppy begging for an education, but the owners didn't know what to do. So by the time the puppy's just 3 months old, it's too late. They've missed it all, especially the early socialization stuff. And so as sure as eggs is eggs, when they're 5 months old, they start to become afraid of people and other dogs. And at 8 months, you can't walk them. They are dog reactive. But you prevent all of this in early puppyhood, you know, fear of people, and then immediately getting into an off-leash puppy class. So I thought if I had something they could download, they could share it with everyone. So please, viewers out there listening to me, I love radio, but this is the only radio program I've done where I can't see the clock. I like radio because it's time to the second, so I know when to shut up, because I do talk a lot. So please download these books and share them with every doggy person that you know. That would make me really happy, because we have to change the way it is for dogs, because they've been deserted by every dog profession. There's no dog profession, breeders, vets, pet store owners, that tell new puppy owners what to do, even though they see every new puppy owner. It's a crying shame. And although I love dogs and cows, like, with a passion, but, you know, I care even more for puppy owners. They're being cheated. So if they get this information up front, they know what's urgent, what's important. Let's get to it. The clock is running. And then their puppy won't develop fears of the environment, of people and other dogs. So sorry, I just got on my soapbox.
No, that's perfect. That is perfect. And we'll definitely post the site, DunbarAcademy.com, and everybody can go download those free eBooks. And if you're thinking about getting a puppy, or you just got a puppy into your life, definitely download those. Get a good start to the puppy's life and your relationship with them. And then we'll circle back. One last plug. You can buy the book, Barking Up the Right Tree, The Science and Practice of Positive Dog Training. And that will just make it even better. So we'll hit it from both fronts. How's that?
Thank you. You're a good man, Tim.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. And I look forward to the other book too. I will say that, you know, I've been making sort of just casual references about how, you know, treating your dogs the way you would treat your kids or treat yourself, and learning early on and building those relationships. And it sounds like the companion book that you're going to be writing with your son will lead right down that perfect path, because there's a lot of training we need too.
It's all about talking to your dog and talking to your children and talking to your employees. You know, when you have a good dialogue going, we don't get the problems. You know, one thing I often mention is my son and I have never had an argument. We actually can't, because he works with me now. We did come close about a few months ago, where we had, let's say, a heated discussion about the way our business should go, but we've never had an argument. because we talk about stuff. And I say, well, how would you like to do it then? What would you like to do today? And usually I say, yeah, do that. It's not mutually exclusive to what I want. Let's do what we both want and see which one is more enjoyable and works better. And so, you know, talking is everything. And today, you know, you look at people in a restaurant and they both got their heads buried in their iPhone. I mean, come on already. And no one's coming over to chat like the good old days, you know? And so it's very directly applicable to human-human relationships too.
I love it. I love it. Well, put the iPhones down and get chatting again with the humans around you. And by the way, when you're out walking your dog, how about putting the iPhone down there and connecting with your animal? I think you could just put the iPhone down. How's that? That's a good message.
I tell people to have a period during their walk with the dog where they find a park bench and sit down and let the dog just lie down and chill, watch the world go by or sniff, and you check your iPhone then. Then put it away and just daydream, because we don't do that enough. Today's, you know, modern day living is too fast. You need like 15 minutes out in the day to chill and sort of stroke your brain again and get it back into working order.
Love it. Love it. Well, sage advice for being with our animals as well as being with the people around us. So a good big kudos on you there. So the last plug, Barking Up the Right Tree, The Science and Practice of Positive Dog Training by Dr. Ian Dunbar. Everybody go out and pick up a copy of that. Definitely download the training sessions for your puppies. We'll get that all posted. And Dr. Dunbar, it's fantastic to talk to you. I love your insights, not only with the animals and all the passion and history you have with them, but I love the insights on human behavior and how we can build the best relationships possible with the animals as well as the humans in our life.
Thank you, Tim. And you are a very good interviewer. And I think it's because you're radio, that radio people know how to ask questions. Whereas TV interviewers are just making asinine jokes and looking cute on TV. So I really enjoyed this. It reminded me of the good old days when I did a regular radio gig in San Francisco, and I loved it. Smoking cigars with this guy, watching the clock to the second, and just, you know, chatting about stuff. So I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me, and I'm available anytime. And thank you everyone out there for listening. Download and share them.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Well, pleasure's all mine, and do appreciate it. Fun chat and great insight as well. So it's a win-win all the way around. So we'll look forward to chatting with you when the next book or the next any opportunity comes about.
Anytime you like.
Fantastic. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the sponsors and producers for making this show possible. If you have any comments, questions, ideas for the show, you can drop us a line at PetLifeRadio.com. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful hosts and shows. It's a cornucopia of animal fun. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.